Coming up on the Who's On podcast, we have the four-time ACC Defensive Back of the Week, Jonas Sanker, joining us at a senior day against SMU this weekend. We also have Chris Wright from thesaber.com joining us to talk about all things UVA and their trip to the Bahamas. That's coming up on the Who's On podcast. Hello and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network. Today, I am joined by a four-time ACC Defensive Back of the Week, Senior Bowl invitee, a two-time eight-man state champion, and one of the best EA college football players on the team. Pretty good basketball player, too, as I remember. I've got Jonas Sanker, UVA safety. Jonas, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, no problem.
What is this week like for you as you get ready? I asked Malachi, just y'all have been playing football in the city of Charlottesville for more than a decade, and you're coming up on your last game in Charlottesville. Has that kind of started to settle in yet?
Yeah, for sure. A little bit. Just, realizing, the time here is coming to an end, but, not dwelling on it too much and, still trying to just stay focused and locked in on what we're trying to do. So that's really the main thing. Just trying to, just finish strong.
Yeah. What, I guess, do you have any role in kind of the senior day, like celebration? Is your parents dealing with all that and just kind of figuring out who's going to be there?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of had to get most all them tickets, but, yeah, I mean, a big family, so it's going to be a lot of people there.
I was going to say, how many siblings do you have?
Six, not including me.
Yeah. That's a lot. Your brother, he's still playing, right? Nick?
Yeah, he's playing at Princeton.
Yeah.
And then I got younger brothers playing as well.
Yeah. So they, I mean, their time's coming up next, but just kind of getting into, as y'all kind of finish out this season, you got two more games left, you're sitting at five wins. I know y'all are trying to, pick up a win, get to that bowl eligibility. I know that's been a goal for this program to kind of establish a floor. What would it mean to you to kind of close out senior day with a win over SMU and get that bowl eligibility?
Definitely a goal of mine. Definitely something I want to do. And, all that takes is just being present every day and just, understanding that the team is the most important thing. So, yeah, that's really it. Just, being a team, coming out and, playing our best game. We've been chasing it all year.
I went back with guys because it's kind of a full circle moment in a way. Y'all, your freshman year, you were supposed to play SMU in the Fenway Bowl. That game never happened. Now you have a chance to get bowl eligibility against SMU. What do you remember about that time? And I guess kind of finding out the news that y'all were not going to be able to play in that bowl game.
Yeah, it was kind of frustrating just because, we had practice and put in all the work to go to the bowl game, and then kind of just COVID just kind of decided to take that out the picture. So yeah, it was definitely frustrating. I remember I was going to start that game too. That was going to be my first college start. So I was ready to go, but everything happens for a reason. So
refresh my memory. Was that an injury situation or is that just kind of you, they were giving you your chance to start?
Yeah, I think they were just giving me my chance.
That's so just kind of thinking back, I asked Malachi because, he was in a similar boat as well. Just did you ever imagine that it would take, kind of this many years to get back to an opportunity where you had a chance to go to another bowl game?
I wasn't sure, but I think the difficulties and the things we've gone through, have propelled us to be a resilient and tough team, and I think we've kind of showed that all throughout this year, just how tough we are. And yeah, I think that's kind of gotten us to where we are today. Now we're in a position with two games left to go to a bowl game, because wherever you're at, it's not easy to win. So not taking wins for granted.
Looking at, let's go back to with you just to the kind of the beginning. Not a lot of people know, but you played pretty much virtually every position in high school. I was there one you didn't play? I don't think I ever saw you on the offensive line, but
I played
was
one game.
one game. See, there you go. just what was that journey like for you? And I know, like with eight man, there's some talk. Being a guy that covered you in high school was like, oh, is he going to get the kind of looks that, other guys playing traditional 11 man football? What was that journey like for you in kind of finding a college home?
Yeah, no, I mean, playing eight man was definitely a challenge. I wasn't thrilled about it. You know, I wanted to play 11 man. I wanted to play big boy football, but you know, at the end of the day, those were things that were out of my control. So just I was able to just kind of focus on controlling what I can control and just, you know, taking advantage of an opportunity to still just be able to play. So, you know, at the time I really wanted to play basketball. I love basketball. I put a lot of time into basketball, but you know, for me, football ended up, you know, presenting more opportunities than basketball did. So, you know, I had to take those opportunities.
I mentioned it, you're a pretty good basketball player. You helped get Covenant to the state semifinals, the Final Four down there. Tony Bennett was there for that game. Obviously, you played with his son Eli. How much was basketball just part of your life growing up?
I think it just helped me develop a lot of the habits I have today. You know, I think basketball is a very skill-oriented sport and just requires a ton of work and just dedication. So does, I mean, I think everything does, but I think in high school, like in high school, I could get away with just being a freak athlete and just playing football. But I think basketball-wise, like, you know, in order to be consistent and be, you know, showing up every day, you know, you had to practice and put in the time. And you know, I'll wake up early before school to make sure I can, you know, get as many shots up as I can. You know, as soon as I get home, that's the first thing I wanted to do growing up as a little kid. All I wanted to do, even if it was by myself. I used to play a game. It was like playing against the invisible people. Like every shot, like if I missed a three, like the other team got 3 points. If I missed a two, they got 2 points. Like I'll just find ways to be creative, just playing basketball, like just so I could play for hours and hours and hours. It didn't matter.
Yeah. Did you ever talk to Tony about basketball or just kind of anything? I know since obviously his son was on the team.
Yeah, no, I mean, whether it was just, you know, being at their house, because I was friends with Eli, just talking about, just listening to him just break down like NBA games and just, you know, how just serious it, and how much it meant to him. Like, it was a whole nother level, you know? And yeah, it was really cool to kind of just, you know, see someone, you know, as high up as him just talk about basketball and just listen to like a lot of his takes on stuff.
What was he like off the court, away from, JPJ and kind of that life?
So he was a really good ping pong player, I'll tell you that. Really good ping pong player. And that competitiveness he has on the basketball court doesn't go away when he gets on the ping pong court either.
Were you able to compete, or is he just kind of smashing you?
I'll compete. I ain't gonna say I was beating him, but you know, I'll get my game in here or there. But they were some pros. Him and Eli were some pros on the ping pong court.
Eli's back around Virginia now. Have you been able to hang out with him much?
Sure, I've been pretty busy, I'm not gonna lie.
That's
Not
true.
really much free time for me, but yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
if I see him around, you know, we're still close.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to football, what was the first time UVA reached out to you when you were in high school? And who was it?
I talked to them a lot. I talked or not a lot. I talked to them a little bit my freshman year. I went to a camp. I remember I was talking to with Coach Hagans a little bit. He knew my dad. My dad mentored him a little bit when he was in school. So that was kind of the first relationship I had kind of built up a little bit my freshman year. And then not until my junior year, Coach Howe reached out to me and wanted me to play DB. And they ended up offering me. And so that was kind of started that.
I know when I talked to you, you said, it was important to go somewhere that kind of had a plan for you, and you kind of saw that in Virginia. How did they lay out that plan?
I mean, I think Virginia is very big on developing guys, and you know, I think, you know, I was somebody who was kind of a work in progress. You know, I like playing football, and you know, I enjoyed it, but being completely honest, I hadn't really practiced football that much growing up. You know, I worked on, you know, lifting and being a good athlete, and the rest of the time I spent playing basketball, so. You know, I knew I was going to have to, you know, focus on some of those details and just developing into a better player. And they've done a good job just every year, just helping me grow and find ways to get better every year.
Did you want to play on the offensive side of the ball just because that's what you had been so accustomed to?
Most of my recruiting was on the offensive side of the ball, but, you know, everything happens for a reason. So I ain't mad about it.
No. You get to UVA, obviously, you get to stay at home, play in Charlottesville. But then you kind of go through a coaching change. What was that time like for you, just kind of getting used to a new coaching staff? I mean, it's something a lot of guys go through in a career, but just what was that time like?
It was tough at first just because I was hurt, and I just know what it's like when coaches come into a new program and there's a guy who's already hurt. Like, I don't know, it's just I beat myself up about that a little bit, and I just was rushing to get back. You know, I just had to show, you know, what kind of player I was. And I mean, they were very, you know, understanding and very, you know, just accepting everybody who was there, and they were hard on guys, and they didn't, you know, let stuff slide. So I kind of liked the tight ship that they were running, and I just really just bought in. It was just, I wanted to work.
Was it just, it was like that? You just kind of bought into everything?
I mean, I saw vision. I trusted it. You know, I know a lot of these guys are coming from winning programs. They know what it looks like. Some of these guys have played in the league. You know, I want to win. I want to play in the league. So why not listen to those guys, you know?
What was your first interaction with Coach Elliott like?
First interaction with Coach Elliott, I think it was when Coach Mendenhall like called him up to like it was a team meeting. He was like, "Oh, this is gonna be your new head coach. Like, I'm gonna give him a minute to talk to y'all." And he kind of just talked to the team, and I didn't really know who he was. So I mean, I was listening, but you know, he talked a little about his background. I was like, "Oh, dang! Like, this dude's been to two national championships in the last 4 years or something." Like, I don't even remember what it was, but like, you could just tell like this dude knows what it takes. Like, he knows how to win. So, you know, numbers don't lie. You can't argue with that.
Looking at kind of your growth as a player, have you surprised yourself this season, just kind of where you're at in your development?
No, not at all. I think, you know, for me, you know, every field I walk on, you know, every room I walk into, you know, I look at myself as, you know, the best player. So, you know, for me to perform and show up, you know, that never surprised me.
Looking at the stats, obviously I mentioned the four-time ACC Defensive Back of the Year, but also you're third among ACC DBs in tackles right now, tied for the league among ACC defensive backs in sacks with two. I got to ask about one stat though. It's the interceptions. You've only had two in your Virginia career. Has there been a couple times where you feel like you missed one?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that just, you know, something I got to work on. You know, obviously I've said, you know, there's areas of my game I want to keep improving on and always finding ways to get better. And one of those is taking the ball away. I felt like last year I did a good job just getting my hand on the ball, but still just wasn't able to come up with any takeaways like interceptions. I was able to get fumbles forced, but no interceptions. So, you know, I'm working on that. I'm trying to grow, trying to be better every day. Hopefully I'll get maybe a couple more this year, one or two this year, so before the season's over, you know, I'm hunting. They're coming.
Rank it, your interception against Pitt, the blocked field goal, or the touchdown against Boston College.
I love picks. I feel like picks as a DB is the best thing, but at the same time, it's like it's hard to block a field goal. But I'm not gonna lie, that fumble against Boston College, like I don't know, I feel like I got so much praise for that when I really didn't even do nothing. Like, the quarterback fumbled. Two of my teammates was fighting over the ball and couldn't pick it up, and it just bounced into my lap. Like, honestly, but just being in the right place at the right time. So,
I remember you deflected a lot of praise after that game. You're like,
yeah,
the ball just kind of popped up and it was just kind of green grass in front of you.
yeah.
This was a kind of talking point earlier in the season. You know, you look at tackle leaders for a lot of teams, it's usually linebackers, and sometimes it's safeties, but in Coach Rudd's defense, it kind of funnels a lot of the playmaking and tackling to you guys back in the secondary, whether it's you or was Antonio Clary, Corey now. Explain kind of how that works. Give me your X's and O's takes. Like, how does that work?
In a sense of why is the back end players some of the main like
Yeah.
productive players. Just, you know, wherever you're fitting from, you know, the overhangs, the unblocked hats. So, you know, depending on where the running back is, you know, say the back's to the weak side of the field, then you're getting a overhang or safety fitting from the strong side because that's where the run's coming to. So just, you know, being able to just understand gaps at a high level just helps safeties play fast and be able to come down and know that, you know, their primary run fitter, you know, they got to play fast, fit their gap, and generally that safety is going to be the unblocked hat expected to down the ball carrier in a one-on-one play.
How much have you grown as a tackler, though, just over the years? You know, obviously that probably wasn't your strong suit coming into Virginia, but now kind of being in the system. You led the team in tackles last year, and kind of you've continued to do that this year.
A lot of it is running to the ball, honestly. A lot of it is running to the ball and just finding ways to get in the action. But at the same time, it's also just, not taking speed off and just kind of taking your shot. And if you miss, making it a good miss. But I'll say one area this year that I've improved a lot on and tried to be more of an impact on is just special teams. I feel like I've gotten at least two or three tackles on special teams a game, which, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it adds up in a season. So, yeah.
Why special teams? Was it just because that was an area coaches were challenging you, or is that just something you kind of felt like?
I mean, it wasn't necessarily a challenge at me specifically. It was more of a team challenge. We've got to be better on special teams. And I think one thing I wanted to do the whole year last year, I wanted to be a gunner because it was just a one-on-one, and it was just those guys are always expected to make the play. And I played some of the interior on punt last year, but I was like, I want to play gunner. I want to be the guy who has to make the play every time. So, I've really took a lot of pride in that role. And then, also on kickoff, just, finding ways to run down, start the game, make plays, bring energy, just however I can. I think those are really, big plays in the course of a game.
Coach joked that you've been begging him to get back on kickoff return. You got to do that. What was how'd you feel that went?
It went, I mean, not as good as I would have hoped, but honestly, it was kind of just a short trial because, I felt like when I went back there, every kick I got was booted out of the end zone. But then as soon as I got out of there, they start kicking it to the 5 and 10 yard line. So, it is what it is. I don't think that's the end of that journey because I know what I can do with the ball in my hands, but, whatever the coaches see fit, I'm gonna roll with it.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Going into this matchup against SMU, obviously they've had a really good first season in the ACC, second highest scoring team in the conference right now, averaging nearly 40 a game. And they got a pretty dynamic backfield with their quarterback Kevin Jennings and Breshard Smith. What are you looking at when you look at this matchup against the Mustangs?
They're an explosive team. They want to make big plays and they're high scoring. So when you slow a team down and you force them to make long drives, and I think it challenges them. But also at the same time, I don't know. I felt like a lot of this year has been so much focus on the opponent, but I feel like this week is going to be a lot about us and just accepting the challenge. Obviously they're the best team in the ACC right now, just accepting that challenge and just competing. And I think if we're able to do that, play our game, play sound, I feel like we've had a solid defense all year just in terms of being able to slow offenses down. So I feel like if we do that, I think we'll be all right.
Is that when you feel like you guys are at your best, when it's not about the other team, it's more about what are we doing, how are we executing when we
Yeah,
go out there?
for sure. For sure. I think that's when we're at our best.
Coming off, I guess, obviously the Notre Dame game kind of got away from you guys for a little bit, five turnovers that'll do that. And obviously a lot of talks, but this week has been about the quarterback position. How do you guys kind of just focus on yourselves, and especially being on the defensive side, there's not much you can do about the offense. How do you just focus on yourselves and what your role is?
Playing together and just playing assignment sound. I think the idea of togetherness comes into play also with just nobody trying to be a hero. Just understand that you got to trust the guys around you, and you got to just be willing to do your job every play. And when the play comes to you, that's when it's your turn to make that play, not trying to make someone else's play. I think when we really buy into that and are just able to trust everybody, that's on the field, I think that's going to be us, playing together and playing as one.
It's going to be Tony Elliott's decision, but just how did those guys, Anthony Calandria and Tony Musket, kind of interact in the locker room?
Oh, they're good. Those are, they're good friends, and that relationship, hasn't changed at all.
Yeah. All right. Couple other questions before I get you out of here. You've obviously are pretty accustomed to Charlottesville. What is your favorite Charlottesville staple?
Oh man.
That's too many.
Favorite Charlottesville staple. That's a hard question. I would say, put me on the spot for this one. They gave me like a warning or something.
People gonna
I
reach out to the hardest question yet comes last.
I like eating place different places. I like a lot of the restaurants here. You know, I like Jack Brown's on the downtown mall. You know, I like why is the I can't think of this restaurant name. It's like down 29, it's a little bit away. They got the really good bread rolls. What's it called?
Red rolls.
Like you know what I'm talking about? And they got like the cinnamon butter. See, all my teenagers know what I'm talking about.
The
Dang. And they got like the steaks.
steaks.
Texas Roadhouse.
Oh, is it Texas Roadhouse?
Yeah, Sakura is a good spot. You know, I like a
Okay.
lot of good food spots around here, but I feel like yeah, really just the food spots. But growing up, you know, I love to go into UVA games and stuff like that. I feel like that's UVA is a big part of like the life and energy of Charlottesville, if that makes sense. But now I'm here, so it's like I can't say UVA is my favorite part of Charlottesville. I go to school here.
Did you ever go hiking or?
A little bit. I've never been the biggest hiker. My family loves to do it, so I'll go with them. But I wouldn't say like, oh, that's my favorite, because then you know everyone's like, oh, he's a big hiker. But
No.
yeah,
What
I do it. I like it more if like you know like Sugar Hollow.
Yes,
Yeah,
yeah.
like that's a cool spot because they got like the water hole and all that. Like I'll do that.
So obviously I'm assuming you went to football, basketball games growing up. Were there any other sports that you like going to
I don't lie if I say I did, but
at UVA?
I guess I could watch soccer a little bit because I'll watch soccer all the time when we would travel to Germany with my family growing up.
Yeah, that's right. I guess do you have a team over in Germany that you root for?
Germany.
Just the national team?
Yeah.
What do you do in your free time? I know we joked about the college football video game, but you don't play that as much during the season. But so right now during the season, with whatever free time you get, what are you doing?
Asking what I do in my free time during the season is not a great question, but if you were to ask me what my hobbies were when I do have free time, I would tell you I like to travel. Obviously, I told you I like to play the game a little bit. I like to go do stuff with my family, like whether it's like just going outside and playing basketball or like just do, like going to like some of their games and stuff like that. Maybe just like kicking it or going to get food with some of my friends or something, like just catching up because I feel like I get so busy sometimes, you know, I don't see or talk to any people that I'm, you know, cool with or close with. But what else? During the season, I really don't be having enough free time to like pick and find something to do. I mean, is laying in my bed and turning something on while I halfway watch it and halfway fall asleep. I don't think that counts as a hobby, but
I think that's just the workforce right there. You
yeah.
get home after a long day of work or whatever, and you just like, I don't have the energy for anything. It's time to go to bed.
Yeah.
You mentioned your brothers earlier. You've got one. What year is Lucas now?
Senior.
Senior. So he's got, this coming up in his future. Just what have you been kind of telling him, and how have you been walking through that process with him?
You know, I just remind him where, you know, wherever he goes, you know, I think, you know, everything happens for a reason. And I really think, you know, that he's gonna be I some people, you know, need to be told the truth. Some people, you know, need some encouragement. I think he can handle the truth. And, you know, I tell him, you know, if he wants to play, you know, he's gonna have to continue to find ways to get better every day. You know, where he's at now, you know, I think he can be really great. I've told him, you know, I think he can play on almost any college he wanted to. But, you know, if he wants to really be an impact wherever he goes, he's gotta continue to find ways to get better and grow.
All right, man. I'm going to let you get out of there on that. That is Jonas Sanker, safety for UVA. Good luck this weekend, and thanks for joining the Who's On podcast. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. Of course, that was my interview with Jonas Sanker, a safety for the UVA football team as they get ready to play SMU this weekend. But big week for men's basketball, too. A tropical week for them. They're heading down to the Bahamas to play a pretty big tournament down there, the Bahamar Hoops Championship. I got Chris right now from thesaber.com joining me. We're going to talk a little bit about UVA basketball, preview a big week for them and the Cavaliers down in the Bahamas. 3-0 right now. Chris, just your biggest positive from this start. It's still so early in the season.
I think the 3-point shooting percentage is very encouraging, but I think more the versatility of who can make them is what I think is probably the biggest positive, right? So Virginia's shooting percentage from three was actually decent last year. They just didn't have very many people that could shoot them. So if you could take either Groves or Isaac McNealy out of the game last year, you had a pretty good chance of slowing down the 3-point attack. It feels like, at least for now, 3 games in, Virginia has threats from multiple spots on the floor, and that can create a whole lot of positives for offense. That's the most valuable shot, right? The 3-point shot. So, if you have multiple guys that can be a threat from there, I think it opens things up a lot. So I think that's probably my biggest positive so far.
Yeah, you look at the 8-man rotation that Ron Sanchez played last game. There's only one non-shooter in that entire lineup, and that's Blake Buchanan, your big man. So that's got to be pretty promising. And of course, we're gonna have to wait and see. Do Day Day Ames and Andrew Rohde kind of continue their, being more steady 3-point shooters than they've shown so far in their career. I was talking to Luke Neer on the radio on Tuesday, and he asked me, of Ames, Rohde, and Jacob Kofi, who do you feel best about their shot? And I say Kofi just because, like, I have a proven track record of Ames and Rohde being shaky shooters. I expected that for Kofi, but he's kind of come in and been a little bit more confident in his shot than I expected. Biggest positive for me is I think it's still early, and we saw a good game from Isaac McNealy. I still don't think we've seen the best from Isaac McNealy, and I think he's kind of still getting going this season. He still has only taken 10 shots one time this season in those first 3 games. And I think, for Virginia to be successful, you want your most efficient offensive player to continue to shoot 10, 11, 12, maybe up to 15 times a game. Like that's what you expect out of him. That's what you want. So I think that's the positive, is that we still haven't seen the best out of him. Negative wise, what's one thing that concerns you at this point?
I'm not sure the ball handling is steady enough, right? Like the turnover percentage right now is 246th in the country. They turn it over on 18.8% of their possessions. That's not great. It's not a great number. So you wonder if there are certain matchups that can bother them a lot. Tennessee might be one, right? At least at one guard position. So you worry about it a little bit. Now, a lot of these turnovers are fixable. They're cleanupable. Some of them are very careless. Day Day Ames had one in the last game where he picked it up with one hand and went to pass and then saw it was covered. That's a coachable thing. You just have to like keep working on it. So if they can erase some of those, that percentage will go down some. But right now it's at least pause for concern. 3 games in with only one pseudo decent defensive team. They haven't seen a really good defensive team yet. So what will that look like?
Yeah, well, they're about to in the Bahamas with Tennessee coming up. But yeah, that's exactly where I was heading. It's just, you saw it against Campbell when they were trying to pressure Andrew Rohde, and they had a little bit of success there. And then obviously Coppin State, I don't know what they were doing defensively with that zone for the majority of the game. And then you saw it again with Villanova. It wasn't a great game from Villanova, but they were able to get a little more pressure, and that's why Sanchez quickly switched, from just having Ames and McNealy out there to also throwing Rohde out there, so you had one more guy that was a ball handler. And that's kind of the interesting thing about the whole Jalen Worley situation, is it just leaves them devoid of multiple ball handlers at this point in the season. But I do think some of the turnovers are kind of just careless. You mentioned that one with Day Day Ames. I'll mention Andrew Rohde was trying to throw a cross court pass to the corner and got picked off, just in put enough on it, or probably just shouldn't have made the pass in the first place. So, there are a couple turnovers that are fixable, but I think they're going to struggle with pressure at times this season. We've seen Virginia teams in the past struggle with pressure. And that's just, it's, I don't know if there's really a solution on the roster to fix that.
I think the willingness to attack, it seems higher so far with Ron Sanchez than it did with Tony Bennett. Very, very, very small sample size, obviously, but I think that can help with turnovers a little bit if you're not trying so hard to just conserve the ball or protect the ball, but you're willing to take that throw ahead to a Kofi dunk against Villanova, is the recent example. But if you're willing to do that some, it can take a little bit of that pressure off, which then could help with turnovers. But we'll see if that's a long-term trend line or just something that opened up against Villanova.
Well, looking at this week, what intrigues you the most about this Baja Mar Hoops Championship down in the Bahamas with a really loaded field. Obviously, Virginia and Tennessee is ranked number 11 in the country, and then Baylor number 13, St. John's number 22. What kind of intrigues you about this opportunity for Virginia?
I think it's the theme of the offseason, the new offense. What does it look like against better defense? Right? Like, you know, Campbell had some success with doing some things to mess up the rhythm and the read and react kind of vibes that this offense has versus the pattern that we had gotten so used to with blocker mover. So if they're forcing read and react, and that's a little bit hesitant because it's still sort of new, you know, just what does it look like against better defenses? And I don't think the second game really matters who that ends up being. I think it'll still be a test that's better than they've seen so far. So certainly Tennessee's going to test it. There's no question about that. So that I think that's the most intriguing thing to me. Can they figure out offense well enough to stay in the game, kind of hang in, or you know, will it be back to the drawing board after they come back from the beach?
I think just this is going to allow a lot of people to kind of make their, I guess, their mind up about Virginia. I think so far you've seen kind of the analytics, even Vegas. I mean, they favored Villanova by 3.5 points going into that game. Clearly, at the end of the day, probably Villanova shouldn't be in the favorite in that game. But I just think there weren't enough data points before that to really have a good guess and feel for this team. Obviously, you're going from Tony Bennett to Ron Sanchez. But you're also going from, you know, a lot of known players to a lot of guys that you haven't seen that much of, you know, with a lot of, you know, players that haven't played a whole lot at the college level. You know, Isaac McNealy is the only guy that really you've seen for a sustained period. So I think it's gonna kind of form a lot of people's opinions for what this Virginia team is going forward, just because you're seeing them against high level competition or people that we've. Teams that we've decided are high level competition, I guess, at this point in the season. Looking at this first matchup, obviously the one matchup we know is UVA versus Tennessee, and then on the other side it's Baylor St. John's. Obviously, the winner will play the winner of that game. The loser will play the loser of the other game. So you get two games no matter what down there. Tennessee this year, just as a little volunteer recap for their season so far, they're 4-0, ranked 11th in the country, as I mentioned. The one win of note is on the road at Louisville, 77-55. I watched a good chunk of that game, and just one, I wanted to see Tennessee because I knew they were coming up, but also I wanted to see Louisville because a lot of people had picked them to finish higher in the conference, and I was very skeptical because they bring so many new players in. And I think when you saw that Louisville team, it really looked like a team that was still figuring out who they are. Tennessee, on the other hand, 39th in the country, averaging 88 points a game right now. First in field goal percentage, fourth in effective field goal percentage. So a really solid team overall. Just your initial impressions of Tennessee.
I mean, typical Rick Barnes kind of vibe, right? Physical, fairly versatile on offense. You know, they're going to be tough in a lot of areas, like whether that's ball pressure or challenging the glass or, you know, stretching with some shooters. And one of those shooters Virginia is familiar with, obviously. So, yeah, I think it looks fairly typical for what you would expect and what you expected from them coming into the season. They are a preseason pick to be really, really good in the SEC. And they're living up to that so far. And again, it's small sample sizes. We don't know a whole lot yet. These Thanksgiving week tournaments are technically Thanksgiving pre-week tournament, right? Are kind of the first signs of, other than a few matchups here and there, of what teams will start to look like. So that it makes it interesting just to see how some of these teams match up in some of these random locations.
Yeah, the feast and feast week has kind of grown over the years. It's not just Thanksgiving week anymore. It's like a week before, a week after, just whenever you can fit all these different, you know, tournaments going on. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting looking at Tennessee starting lineup. You mentioned before, but had anyone guessed this before the season, I don't think I would have. Who is their second leading scorer right now on the team for Tennessee?
I assume it's Igor
It
Milicic.
is
So.
Igor Milicic. Obviously, I set you up there. Yeah, it is Igor Milicic. Obviously, Virginia fans familiar with him. He spent 1 year at UVA, spent two seasons at Charlotte, one under Ron Sanchez, and last year, obviously, without Ron Sanchez. And now he found his way back to, you know, power four, power five basketball with Tennessee this year. Been kind of surprising, and I wanted to watch Tennessee and again, because I wanted to see him and just kind of his growth as a player. He's doing a lot of the same things, you know, stretching the floor. I think he's got a little bit more of a post game now, but what do you just think of this matchup against him? And I mean, I'm not really sure what to make of him yet.
I mean, I think depending on who else is on the floor, Virginia has the versatility to deal with a versatile forward. That's kind of what their look is as well, right? So, you know, it's not a he's going to be more experienced than, say, TJ Power if that becomes a matchup at times. But Elijah Saunders is just as experienced as he is. So if that's the matchup, you know, it just kind of depends on how things shuffle out. You know, I saw a social media post, I think it was on X or Twitter or whatever it's called. And I can't remember which national media type it was, but it said something like Igor Milicic is a good example of the new college basketball where water can find its level, you know. So he goes down, he comes back up, and I'm like, well, what we used to like really appreciate about college basketball is somebody would do that all at one spot, right? That you would get a little taste, and then you would take a while, and then you would be good in the end, all at the power four level instead of dipping down to get playing time or experience or develop elsewhere. And who knows, would his trajectory have gone the same way? I have no way to know that, other than Virginia's done it an awful lot over, you know, the pre multiple transfer world. But yeah, it's intriguing just because he's been here before, but I barely remember him here because it
It's
was, he didn't play a whole lot and it was that weird year. And so like, it'll be interesting to watch him, but I'm not overly attached to It
no,
doesn't feel like he was a former Virginia guy to me. I don't know.
it was such a weird, you know, kind of, you know, tenure for him at Virginia. He actually played in more games than I remembered. He played in 16 games back in the 21-22 season, all coming off the bench. And you know, he had a couple moments. I remember some block shots. I remember, you know, him, you know, make it a three, or it just wasn't a lot of substance to it. It just kind of came in spurts, and then obviously he decided to transfer, get some more playing time. And you kind of look at his development, and he's kind of been on a, you know, kind of that slow upward trajectory, going, you know, from only scored 2 points as a freshman at Virginia, then next year at Charlotte he averages, you know, around 7 points, and then kind of has a little bit of a breakout last year, averaging 12 and 8. And now kind of has continued that at Tennessee. He's just an interesting piece, but I think obviously of the players I'm most concerned with, I would probably put him fourth, maybe fifth in that lineup. Because Tennessee, this is a really good basketball team. They have a lot of good players. Looking at their starting lineup, Zakai Ziegler, he's going to be a guy a lot of people know. He's been around for a long time. Chaz Lanier, North Florida transfer, really good scorer. Jamai Meshack, really good defensive player, and then Felix Akpara, a good defensive big man in there. So just anything about that starting lineup kind of stick out to you?
I mean, I think it's the fact that both guards are able to score. So we have a major question still with Virginia is do they have a defensive stopper? They have a good defensive lineup. So collectively, they're defending well, maybe a little better than people expected at this early stage, given that the pack line takes years of experience, that old adage, right? You know, I tend to push back a little bit on that. It's not brain surgery, the pack line. It's how continuous can you be within it. But you know, when you have two guards that can get double digits, two guards that can get their own, can create their own shots, create for others, does Virginia have an antidote for that at multiple guard positions? Obviously, McNeely's been pretty good defensively. Probably their best defensive player, Coach Sanchez thinks so far. You know, but we have questions with Andrew Rohde. Can he guard a quicker guard if they go to a big lineup? You know, Day-Day Ames, you know, how does he fare defensively? Because at times he gets a little lost still. So yeah, when you have two guards that can score, that catches my attention the most because I don't think particularly post Reese Beekman, right? We're so used to 4 years worth of, oh yeah, well that's taken care of. Or even if you want to go pre that with Kihei Clark, right? Oh, okay, that's taken care of. We don't have to worry about that one guy. And right now, there's not that on Virginia's roster. So those two guys both being double digit scorers immediately jumps off the page to me.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking through my head earlier today, it was just like, how do they match up, you know, with the supposed starting lineup for Virginia, is what they've used so far between Day-Day Ames, McNeely, TJ Power, Saunders, and Buchanan. Obviously, you know, Sanchez is so quick to sub, so it'll probably be 2 minutes in. We'll see Jacob Kofi come off the bench or Andrew Rohde come off the bench, and kind of have a due to line up and new matchups to think about. But yeah, I am a little concerned about Zakai Ziegler. I think he is a really good guard. And you see what he can do scoring wise. He averages 15 points a game, almost 8 assists, just a tick under 8 assists in the season. And he's really good at getting pressure on opposing teams. And that's kind of what concerns me is, we talked about earlier is the ball handling for Virginia. And can, they not turn the ball over? And when you're facing a guy like Ziegler who likes to pick you up, full court, likes to pick you up at half court. It's just, can they get the ball across the floor? So it's going to be a really big test for Data Ames or Andrew Rohde, whoever it ends up being that gets guards by Ziegler. And then for also, yeah, he's not a guy that scores a lot, but Jemai Meshack is a tough defender for Tennessee. And so I'm going to be intrigued, who do they put him on? Is he guarding, the bigger Elijah Saunders, or is he going out and trying to, chase Isaac McNealy around the perimeter? And bother him through screens. So, really interesting lineup there for Tennessee. I've liked watching them play usually every year because I think they're a good offensive team. I think they're a good defensive team usually. Looking at the most interesting matchup to watch, and the one I picked out, I just talked about it, Zakai Ziegler, because when Jalen Worley transferred out, my biggest question was who is going to guard the smaller, quicker guards that you're going to face, now against Ziegler, but also in the ACC. And I think we haven't really seen Data Ames have to do that yet. So I'm interested to see if he can do that against Sakai Ziegler.
No, I think that's the right matchup both ways, right? Like Virginia will have someone else initiate if he tries to pick up full court. They'll just have one of the other guards bring it up, particularly if they go to that multi ball handler lineup that we saw a decent amount in the last game. So I think that's where you have to start. I get interested about, just who deals with McNealy, right? He's not going to shoot it a lot, it seems. And I know he probably should, right? Like, if you're shooting 45% or whatever it is, you should shoot more. You're not going to find a better shot in that possession if you have a semi-open look, right? 45% from three is a really good points per possession number or expected point value number. So, to me, like, if he has an opening, you should shoot it. How does Tennessee try to counter that, right? Because last year we got used to the game plan, right? Like, lock and trail, meaning sit on his hip, follow him around a screen. Make him curl off of that screen and then defend from there, right? There's more to it now. He can come off a ball screen, he can come off a pin down screen, he can come off a handoff, he can set a screen and pop. There's just a little more variety to it. So how does a team like Tennessee, who is very good defensively, how do they approach trying to slow him down a little bit? And not necessarily maybe make him shoot less, because he's doing that on his own, right? Like, but maybe make the shots he does get more difficult. You don't want him going 6 for 6, because that leaves a whole lot of open shots for or open opportunities for other guys. If he can put up 20 something on that low amount of attempts, that does help the offense in a lot of ways, because other guys get more shots and therefore they don't have to be as good percentage wise on their shots if he's going to hit that well. So I look at whatever they choose, like with him, that's the other matchup I'm watching closely.
I can guarantee one thing. Tennessee and Rick Barnes are not going to play that deep, deep drop coverage that Villanova played against Virginia and just let them cook them from outside. I just, if there are questions about Kyle Neptune, that was one of them. Just like, what were you thinking there, man? Like, you're letting, Elijah Saunders or Blake Buchanan come up and set a screen, and then McNeely's just wide open for three off the screen. You couldn't have made it easier for him to go 6 for 6. I know some of those were contested too, but just was really perplexing being there watching that Baltimore last Friday. Player to watch.
Ziegler, by the way, we talk about how good Isaac McNealy's 3-point percentage is. Ziegler's at 47.6%
Yeah.
from three. So it's not like you can just back
But
off and try to contain the drive. He's not that kind of quick guard. He can knock it in from deep too. So he's going to be an intriguing matchup.
But he's been kind of up and down with his shot over the years. I think, last year shot 34%, 31% the year before that, 35 as a freshman. So
You're
be
hoping for
interested.
law of averages because
Yeah,
he's gone
you're
four for
hoping it comes
seven.
down. I'm hoping in the reverse that Data Ames and Andrew Rohde's averages stay up and that his go back down to the mean.
Yeah, he's four for seven, 3 for 4, 3 for 4 his last three games. So maybe it'll average out against Virginia.
Doesn't always work that way. Maybe there'll be something with the backdrop in the Bahamas. I'm not really sure what the court looks like there. I remember, people were asking Rhodey about the backdrop at the Baltimore game, just because it's a weird arena, because you kind of had like the basketball court in the middle of it, and like the seats were all kind of like pushed back around it. It was a weird arena, so maybe you'll get some luck from that. Player to watch in this one, who do you have your eye on?
I think Elijah Saunders, because I think he's the drought buster in a way, because you can give him a touch on the block. Doesn't mean he'll make it every time, but you can at least give him touches in a way that can break up droughts, right? So that mid post player, not a post up, not a face up, but that kind of in between area, you can do both, I think is intriguing. But I also think for this reason, he's cramped up 2 games in a row. And I think that can be concerning with back to back games. And tropical location, is he properly prepared hydration wise, or have they figured out whatever's causing that? That's enough alone to make me curious, like as important as I feel like he is, and higher level competition on the other side, you can't afford to have him cramping up, even if it's for a minute and a half to try to get right down the stretch of a game. So for me, it's Saunders for sure.
You kind of went the same way. I was changing mine as we were talking, and I'm like, yeah, it's got to be Elijah Saunders, and mainly because of that point you're talking about with the cramping. He's such a crucial player for this team, and provides so much versatility for them and the roles that he can play. But I was shocked when I looked at the stats afterwards, and it said he played 32 minutes against Villanova, because I swear it felt like when I was in Baltimore sitting there, I felt like I was watching the sideline for like 10 minutes straight, just seeing if he was going to be able to come back in the game, what they were doing, what they were working on. It was like, you saw Ivan Saliba, the trainer, just kind of giving him different gels and like working on, I guess it's upper leg, and Kyle Guy would come check on him, and then like Ron Sanchez would keep looking down the bench, especially when Buchanan picked up that fourth foul. He kept looking back, being like, is he ready yet? Is he coming back? And he would start sprint jogging up and down. But yeah, he provides such a big role, and this does feel like a game for Saunders where he kind of just gets those shots in the rhythm of the offense and just kind of finds his gaps and gets good shots at the rim. And we haven't seen him shoot a ton from outside, but he can hit them. So it feels like a game that he could, all of a sudden you're like, oh wow, he's at like 16, 18 points or something like that. And just his physicality. I know Igor's put on some weight since he left UVA, but I don't think he's at that level as Saunders. It's just how well built he is. So be interesting to see that. All right, prediction time. There is no line out yet for this game, but everything that I see, it looks like it'll be between 9.5, 10.5 point favorite for Tennessee coming into this game. So how would you go?
Virginia's often better in these tournaments than people expect them to be, over the course of the last decade and a half. Now, obviously, things are way different now in terms of the transfer portal and obviously coaching change and all of that. But I think it'll be competitive, right? I'm not expecting Virginia to get run off the court. I know there are still some concerns in various areas. I understand that, but and the matchups aren't great, right? But I think they hang in. Right. And I don't know what that means. Maybe Tennessee by 8 when it's all said and done or something like that. But I'm not sold in these early season tournaments that blowouts are a given. Right. You know what I mean? So we'll see. I mean, Tennessee's capable of doing that. If they get to 88, is that what their average was? I think so. 88, then yeah, they're going to win by a lot. Right. I just don't think they're going to get to the 80s. I think it'll be more, 74, 66 or 70 to 64 or something like that. In a range that Virginia could be in a winning range. I just think they're going to have to play really, really well. And I don't know that they can duplicate that Villanova 3-point shooting. If they do, they'll have a really good chance of winning.
I would go around 74, 68, kind of a race to the 70 game, but I would pick Tennessee in this game. It's the only opponent I would pick probably them to lose outright to. I really like this Tennessee team. I kind of like the group of players that they have. I think this is going to be one of the better teams in college basketball this year. Just based off the experience watching them against Louisville and then seeing a couple other clips and just kind of seeing these players and how they've developed over the years. I think Chaz Lanier, probably a guy that doesn't get talked about enough, but I think he's gonna be a big time scorer for them this year in the SEC. So I think 74-68 UVA makes it competitive, and then we'll see who they play in that other game. The rest of the field, you got number 13 Baylor, who I mentioned before. They UVA and Baylor last met 2 years ago in another one of these types of tournaments in Las Vegas. UVA won that game 86-79. That was kind of a scoring explosion game. I remember Armon Franklin had a really good one in that one. And then number 22, St. John's. Just gotta throw the stat out there. Rick Pitino, 1-5 against Virginia when he was at Louisville. So he hadn't had a lot of success. What do you think of the rest of this field?
I mean, these are all higher level teams. They're going to be in the at large discussion if they don't end up winning their conference, right? Like, so this is an important tournament in the sense of eye test and resume points, whether you win a game or don't win a game. Like, if you at least look the part, people won't write you off for the rest of the year, right? This is what happens with these tournaments now. Like, no matter how new the rosters are and all of that. This conference went 1-9 during Thanksgiving week, so they don't deserve but one bid. Like, that it really frames a narrative for the upcoming season. So in Virginia's case, being competitive in these games and ideally winning one or two would be a big boost for their long-term goals.
It's not going to damage your resume. You're coming away with a quad one loss, most likely, if you lose a game. So, prediction time. We both predicted Virginia to lose this first game. Do they go out the weekend 0-2, or do they ended up 1-1?
No, they'll win one.
You think so? Okay, that second game. That's kind of how I felt.
I think they have the versatility and the pieces to win one of these two games. It's an uphill climb because we don't know a lot yet. You know, we don't know how Sanchez handles tournament play. We don't know how these players will gel together in a neutral site setting that's not, what, an hour from DC, where all of your alums can drive over without even getting a hotel room, right? Like, it's very different. There will be a decent Virginia presence there, I think, because Virginia has a basketball fan base that likes these tournaments. But
I heard from a
I
lot
just
of
think they'll win
people.
one. I think they'll win one.
I've heard from a lot of people that are traveling down to the Bahamas. Like they saw the trip and they're like, "Well, you don't have to twist my arm. Yeah, sure, I'll go to the Bahamas before Thanksgiving. That sounds great." Transition to football real quick. Just some predictions. I had Jonas Sanker on earlier talk about just kind of where the team is and his journey and everything. But prediction time. SMU coming in number 13 in the country in the college football playoff rankings. The big question this week, and we're going to leave it at that, is who starts at quarterback, Chris?
Tony Musket. To me, I think it's obvious. I know what the quotes were, and I know all of that. Players know, the team knows when something's not quite right. And the vibe I got watching last week's game on television was the players know that Musket gives them a better chance right now. They won't come out and say it, nor should they. Like, as teammates, they shouldn't say it. But I think it's really obvious right now. And I'm not judging Anthony Calandry or anything like that. Just the way he's playing right now, less than 60% completion percentage, less than 200 yards passing, seven interceptions. This multiple game stretch here is not the level that you need to play at to be able to win games against higher, quality competition. Obviously, SMU is ranked in the playoff ranking system right now. So, yeah, I think it's obvious. I don't know if they'll do it. Tony Elliott sounded very much like, AC deserves a chance to show how he'll respond. Now, that can mean practice, show how he'll respond in practice, but that sounds like we need to see how he'll respond in a game. My problem with that is if you dig too big of a hole, are you putting your whole season on how will this kid respond? Right? Like, coaching's hard. You have to make hard decisions sometimes. And to me, this one's quote unquote hard, but I would roll with the experienced guy. I think you can run the football a little bit against SMU. I think Musket will find passing openings. I think where Calandria is missing reads like right now, the openings that are going to be there against SMU, I'm not convinced that he'll find them fast enough. So I think it's obvious. We'll see.
He called it a delicate situation, and it is. And I would say it's probably the toughest decision he's had to make on the football field in his time at Virginia. I think with the stakes on the line of getting to a bowl game, what it would mean for the program and picking who this quarterback's going to be, and I think it'll be the hardest and kind of maybe not. Some people won't think it's hard, but I think it'll be the most telling and maybe most impactful decision he's made yet, just based on how this rest of the season goes. I think he's going to stick with Anthony Calandria. I think you got to take press conference coach speak for what it is. And he could just be given SMU. You gotta worry about both quarterbacks. You got a game plan for both quarterbacks, but I think he's leaning and he wants to stick with Calandria if Calandria earns it. And I think that's kind of the way I see him leaning at this point. Player to watch. You've made a couple in your article, your preview and predictions up on the saber.com right now. Who is your player to watch?
I honestly don't remember what I wrote, but so I'll say Xavier Brown. I think that might have been
That
who I said.
was one of them. Yep.
But I feel like his touches have gone up. I know he was one of the ones that limped off last week, briefly. So who knows how healthy he is, and that's been part of the concern. Can he stay healthy? But to me, he's the type of dynamic guy, either running or catching the football, that could make a couple key plays in a game where SMU speed and they fly to the ball and all that. I could see over pursuit and he gets a crease. He feels like a guy that could make a big play in this game.
Not just because he was on the podcast, not just because he's the four-time ACC Defensive Back of the Week, but I'm going Jonas Senker and Malachi Fields. I think the two hometown guys, last game in Charlottesville, I asked them, you've been playing football in the city of Charlottesville for more than a, decade, almost 2 decades now. Like, what is the emotion? And I think both these guys, they want to go out on a high note, and what better way than, getting a win against SMU to become bowl eligible for, just the second time in their careers. So I think that would be pretty big for them. So I'm gonna go ahead and say that they'll put something together on the field on Saturday. Predictions time, yet again, here we go. 9.5 point underdog against SMU. Line feels about right, but I'm going 27-24 Virginia. I think they talk a lot about this bowl game, and getting to 6 wins is something that means a lot to them. Well, now's the time to show it. Whoever's the quarterback, you got to go out there. And I think this defense is going to be able to, they've held teams under their scoring average for the majority of the season. And I think they'll do that again against this high powered SMU offense. So I'm going to go 27-24 in that range.
So I picked Virginia 30-27, the in a find a way game.
Yeah.
I think 9.5 is too high. You know my longstanding stance on this, that the majority of college football is in the middle. And I know SMU's 9-1 and they're ranked in the college football playoff rankings, but look at their schedule. Okay, so this is similar to Indiana, right? Like I understand why they're ranked. They should be ranked. They give them their due. They score a lot of points. They're a good football team, but are they really a playoff like threat? No, I don't think they are. I think they're more similar to the team that played BC and Pitt and Duke. They won all three of those games. Louisville, all of those games were close.
Yeah.
So they don't feel like a easy 10-point favorite, 9.5-point favorite to me. Anybody on any given week, right? So for me, it comes down to this. Can Virginia find the motivation and energy in a stadium that's not going to be rowdy? Right. Like this means a lot to them. They're
Yeah.
gonna have to generate it on their own. Right. It's a noon game. The students aren't gonna be there. The season ticket holders are, the diehards are gonna be there and they'll be loud. The ones that do come are still into it, but it's not overwhelming in any way, shape, or form. So when they run out of that tunnel and the hill's not full, can they ignore that? That's outside noise that Tony Elliott talks about, right? Like you say things like, we need the fans. Like, do you? Right? Like, do you? If you do, that makes games like this harder. To me, you need each other. And can you find that enough to pull off a win that nobody says you should win?
Yeah, earlier with Jonas Senker, I kind of asked him about SMU breaking them down, and he said at the end of the day, like, we play our best when it doesn't matter who the other team is. So like I feel like in games against Clemson and Notre Dame, they say all the right things, like, you don't play the logo, you play the game or whatever. But like it was clear in some of those games that like they were playing, they realized, oh man, we're playing in Death Valley against Clemson, or oh man, we're playing in South Bend against Notre Dame. If they focus and just play against, kind of play for themselves and play, and focus on what they're doing and they're not making mistakes, I think that's when they've been most successful, in games against Pitt, in games against Boston College earlier in the year, and even against Louisville when they almost pulled that upset off. So, if they can do that, then I think it'll be a good day in Charlottesville on Saturday. If not, then a lot's going to be riding on that game next week in Blacksburg, especially with Virginia Tech. You got to see what they do against Duke, if they can get bowl eligibility this week, or do they have to wait another week? So, should be interesting, but yeah, I'm not expecting a big crowd on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it's the last home game of the year. They are running a ticket promotion where you can, the Ticks for Vets promotion, because it is a Heroes Day, Heroes Appreciation Day. So, maybe it'll be a decent crowd, but listen, that we've seen the home crowds this year. We're not trying to be rude. It just kind of the facts are there. Like, we've seen who's
Yeah.
sitting in the stands and who's not. So, I don't expect a turn on a dime situation where, against a team that most people aren't tuned into. This game is on national television, but it's SMU. It's not North Carolina when you laid an egg, and Virginia fans are always tuned into that game. So we'll see. I just don't expect it to be a big group watching them play.
Plenty of tickets for family members and everyone that wants to be there to see their seniors play their last game at Scott Stadium. But all right, Chris, that's going to do it. We will see what happens this weekend down in the Bahamas in Charlottesville, and it'll create an interesting week no matter what happens. So thanks again for coming on the Who's On podcast, and we'll catch you next week.